In this morning, I haven't got over the fact that for the last 40 years, just about every Sunday morning, I've been preaching, and for the last few months, I've been listening. And I love listening, and it's been good, but it's just great to be able to share with you again this morning. If you're a regular, you'll know that Lynn and myself and about 13 or 14 others have just been what many of you described as a trip of a lifetime. And in many ways it was. Do you know the only problem with a trip of a lifetime? What have I got to look forward to? It's gone. Really, if I've had the trip of a lifetime, all there's left is to wind down and start preparing to check out. Because theoretically I've had it. I've had the trip of a lifetime. Do you know, I'm very grateful, and you've heard this over the last 26 years that I've been here, that very early in my ministry, God introduced me to the book of Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesiastes has inspired me, challenged me, and confused me. After all, any book that's written by both the wealthiest man and the wisest man in the world that starts off with meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. That kind of grabs my attention straight away. And you would think if a book started off like that, it would depress you, wouldn't you? Do you know anybody that's prepared to have a look at something and call it for what it is inspires me? Because we live in a day when nobody wants to talk about reality. We're kind of pumping up our tyres and living with facades and making life look better than it really is. And all we talk about is our big, bad, beautiful world. And nobody wants to tell us the truth anymore. I love Ecclesiastes because it tells us the truth. It's helped me grapple with both the mystery of life and the majesty of God. It's helped me see that when I'm at my greatest, I'm not that great. And when I'm at my weakest, God is not that weak. When Jason asked me to preach today, and then he said, why don't you preach the next 3 weeks? I thought, that is wonderful. I do appreciate that. But then he thought he'd slip in just another little thing. He said, basically, you're on your last legs. You haven't got much preaching to go. Because I, if you don't know, I'm finishing up in February. And so there's just this little reminder that things are changing. And I don't need to remind you of that this morning. Things change all the time. Things are always changing. Life changes. I want to show you a few photos. Give you a bit of an idea where we might have been over the last few weeks. That was probably the nicest. Oh, here we are. Anybody tell me where we might be? We'll just flick through these if we go along. Somebody might recognise something. Anybody? Dubrovnik, yeah. Trying to be arty. Yeah, there's the bay. There's a wall that goes all the way around the old city of Dubrovnik. It takes about 2 hours to walk around. All these photos are taken from on top of the wall. Just a very, very beautiful place. And the sun sets over Dubrovnik and we're up on top of the mountain looking at all those beautiful scenes. The day that we're in Dubrovnik was the day that we got the email from Lois telling us that she'd been to the doctor and that she was battling cancer. Face to face, while we are experiencing the most majestic scenery on the face of the earth, Lois is facing what the Bible describes as the greatest enemy. Got a few more photos. This time we've gone to a place or country called Montenegro. Beautiful place. We went out on an island and we saw this beautiful old church. That church was built, by the way, by sailors who just wanted to honour God that they safely got back into the harbour. And so it's full of little relics to say thank you to God that they'd made it safe. Just a spectacular, peaceful, beautiful, wonderful place to be. That was the day we got news from John that he'd been diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus. So here we are on the other side of the world, and we're looking at the most beautiful scenery, and two of the people who we love dearly are in the fight of their lives. What do you do with all of that? How do you feel writing home to somebody and just say, I'm thinking of you while I'm here? You know, time fills up, and this is what Ecclesiastes tells us again and again. Time fills up with the same minutes, but not the same moments. That's the problem we have when life keeps changing. When you're on a little island off the coast of Montenegro, moments are filled with wonders. When you're sitting in the room of an oncologist, you have lots of wonder, but it's a different kind of wonder. Same minutes, but different moments. And this, to me, if you read through the book of Ecclesiastes, is where Solomon comes again and again. He faces us. He will not let us get away from life's gut-wrenching moments and life's sublime joys that you and I can't even begin to describe. And the funny part about it is that they happen simultaneously. It's one of the things that's inspired me in ministry over the years. Whenever I look out on a congregation, you are not all in the same place. Even though we're in the same place this morning. Life is not lived in a theological or theoretical bubble. Faith is all about staring down reality as God holds us in these big, strong, eternal, never-failing hands. Not making out everything's different. Last Sunday, 26 people in Texas went to church and died in their pews. Last Tuesday, two little 8-year-old boys went to school and died in their classroom by a runaway car. This week, another 29,000 children under the age of 5 have died every day because of malnutrition. That's about 21 every minute. Well, we know about Ecclesiastes. I'm not sure what you wanted to hear this morning, but I'm telling you, Ecclesiastes will not let us live with a Hollywood kind of faith that says, why don't we make out it's all different? Why don't we make out it's okay to live like this when it's not okay? We're seeing a bit of that come out now, aren't we? We've got one celebrity after other is saying, you know what, Hollywood has not been what it looks like. There's a dark underbelly which is starting to surface. Folks, don't be surprised. You're not surprised, are you? But don't think it only happens in Hollywood. This is what Solomon's trying to say. Will you come on a journey and look at me with life as it really is? Or do you just want to live with the facade? You know, when we were in Barcelona, we went to see the Sagrada Familia. Do you know the funny part about the Sagrada Familia is you can't photograph it. It's too big. It's too ugly. It's too awesome. It takes up a whole great big huge block, and you just can't get it all except if you're up in the air. This was a Catholic church designed by the Catalan architect Antoni Gaudí, commenced in 1882, and they hope to finish it in 2026, 100 years after Gaudí's death in 1926. As we were walking to see this magnificent building, there were 13 of us on our way. And we were walking and went across a road, and as we did, Lynn looked right before she stepped off the footpath. Trouble is, in Europe, you got to look left. And as she stepped off the footpath, I screamed, threw out my hand, and she stopped dead as a taxi went past about a millimetre from her nose. If it had been me, it would have taken my nose off. Do I thank God for that? Do I? Did I remember to pray that morning for Lynn's safety? Do you ever struggle with this? Do I ever say thank you, God, for sparing her life, because that would have spoilt my holiday? Well, it would have changed my life. So does God look at me and say, Neil, I will spare your wife, but I won't spare someone else's? What do you do with that? While we're in Malta, we visited this beautiful church called St. John the Baptist. That's it. Looks like a big Spurgeon's tabernacle. Inside, it is nothing short of spectacular. On the 9th of April 1941, that bomb pierced the dome of that church and fell on the floor while 300 people worshipped in church. And for some unknown reason, that bomb did not explode. It rolled across the church floor as 300 people held their breath. And that day they were spared. And now we go and take photos of the bomb. I made inquiries as to whether it had been defused. They told me it had. Did God do that? Are we safe in here? You know, we bomb-proof? Are our lives bomb-proof because we are children of God? Is my wife safe because she's the wife of a pastor? You know, Solomon again and again hauntingly forces us to faith. It will not let us believe that God is consumed with my world, and at the same time he ignores or is impotent for those who are suffering unimaginable pain, or those who have been marginalized or abused, people who live in fear or in hopelessness. You know, after all, God knows my faithfulness, and he's all about making sure that I'm doing okay. And meanwhile, the rest of the world is in trouble. But you know, there's something else that haunts me. Because elsewhere in the Bible, it says things like, not even a sparrow falls from the tree without God knowing. Isn't that funny? God even knows the number of the hairs on my head. In fact, the psalmist says, Lord, you bottle every tear that I shed. The psalmist says, you know every word that comes out of my mouth before I even speak it. Lord, you know my heart. So what kind of God is this? Well, God is also invested not just in the big stuff, but he reaches out to me in ways that I've got no right to expect. And the Bible calls that grace. Grace. When Jason read Ecclesiastes 3 and all those words, a time to be born and a time to die and a time for this and a time for that, you don't need me to tell you the Hebrew words to get the meaning of all that. You know it's true. Life keeps changing. Just when you think you've settled in to life comes death. Just when you think you've settled into one particular season, it changes and something else comes. And so the question I need to ask this morning, and I want you to think about this right through today, maybe through the week, the question is this: what time is it? What time is it? I'm not asking you to look at your watch. What time is it in your life? You ever stop to think about that? Do you know where you are at the moment? What time it is? You see, we spend most of our life living in the wrong time. I'm going to let you in a little secret of something Lynn does, which I find really frustrating. But there's many of them, but I'll let you know just this one thing. In the clock in her car, she keeps it 10 minutes fast. Because you know why she does that? Do you do that? Your father. You know what? She says, but I've always got an extra 10 minutes. Put your hand up if you think that is really, really stupid. You're not game, are you? You worried about what Lynn's going to do. Where'd that glass go, Josh? Doesn't make any difference whether you put your clock forward or backwards. We spend most of our time living in the wrong time. We look back and we lament what we've lost. We look at Monday and we wish it was what? Friday. We look at being a kid and we can't wait to be an adult. We look at school and we can't wait to get to uni. We look at our mortgage, we can't wait till we pay it off. We look at work and we can't wait till we have holidays or long weekends. We wake up at 2 a.m. and we wish it was 7 a.m. We miss an opportunity, we want to go back and have our time all over again. We can't wait for the kids to grow up, and when they grow up, we want them to be babies again. We retire and we wish we were young again. Do you realize how much you spend your life living in the wrong time? You sit in church and you say, I wish this sermon would be over. Listen, I've done a body language course. I know who you are. It's not going to be over for another 10 minutes. Stop living in the wrong time. You know, it dawned on me during the week, it should have dawned on me 40 years ago, that I believe that faith is possibly one of the only places you can live in real time. That's what makes it so exciting. Faith gives us a capacity to live in real time, not projecting ourselves backwards or forwards or somewhere else. Because you have a look there at verse 11. Verse 11 of Ecclesiastes 3, it says, He, God, has made everything beautiful in its time. In its time. Real time. You know, too many of us are trying to live in the wrong season. It's like when winter changes to spring and the sun comes out. It's not hot, but we're so glad to see the sun. We put on a t-shirt and we freeze all day because we're trying to make out that it's summer when it's not. You can't live in the wrong season. You just can't. And I'm not asking you to believe that without faith. I'm not even asking you to believe it as a cold truth. I'm asking you to believe that you need to live in your time by faith. As a child who is wrapped up in the arms of a father who loved us with a love that was so great, he gave his only son to die for us, to rise from the grave, so that we might have a faith that was otherwise unbelievable and unsustainable. Do you get this? You can only live in real time by faith. You know, people have said to me, how does it feel now you've retired and you're not doing anything? Folks, can I just say one thing? I haven't retired yet. I'm still doing some stuff. I know I talk about having coffees, but that's work with people. But someone asked me that this week, Mike Mills, the head Sharang, what's his title? Our state executive minister. He said, how do you feel? I said, Mike, I don't know because my time hasn't come yet. I can't live in another time. There's things to do now. And so, let me just say this. How do we deal with living by faith in a changing world over which you've got no control? Two things I want to mention this morning, and I'll be fairly brief with them. Number one, do what you can, not what you can't. I want you to write that down. That is quite profound. That wasn't rhetorical. Write it down. Do what you can. You see, here's the problem. When things keep changing, we think that our circumstances dictate what we can do and what we can't. We've got to get out of that mentality. We've got to start doing what we can according to our time and according to what faith allows us to respond to what God is doing in our lives. Let me give you some examples. If you are old, put your hand up if you're old this morning. Name it. Come on. Come on, there's a few of you that should have your hands up. I don't know when you turn old, but when you get old, stop thinking you have to do what you've always done. Find out what age has equipped you for. You get the difference? You're old for a purpose. Stop trying to be young. If you're a mother with little children, stop thinking you still have to have those beautiful, peaceful, quiet moments with Jesus. You hardly ever get them. Be patient. Love your children. Grab a moment while you can. Pray for them on the run. Do your best. If you're the parent of teenagers, stop thinking your kids are going to love you like they always have. Just be grateful they grunt every now and then to acknowledge your existence. Rejoice in that. If you're sick, stop trying to do it all by yourself. Let somebody carry you. If you're well, go find somebody to carry. If you're poor, stop feeling guilty because you can't pay for the renovations here at Unley Park. If you're rich, pay for them. Because God made you rich for a reason. That's your time to do something with your money. If you're spiritually dry, stop trying to look like a mega saint. If you're spiritually healthy, practice humility. If God is answering your prayers, keep praying in faith. If God is not answering your prayers, keep praying in faith. See, the underlining message of Ecclesiastes 3 is control. Do you know you cannot control your time? I can say to you, what are you going to do this after? You know, in reality, you haven't got any control over that. Bible says, don't boast, you may not be here this afternoon. So, in reality, life keeps changing out of our control. I mean, you know, I've said it many times, I wasn't born normal, anormally. I was born by our front door at home. That wasn't the way it was supposed to be. Life keeps throwing up these kind of curveballs. I mean, we arrived in London on the 15th of September, about 8 weeks ago, and as we taxied along the runway heading into the terminal there at Heathrow Airport, I turned on my phone and I had about 5 messages from home. And every one of these messages said to me, Dad, do not catch the underground. I thought, how are we going to do that? We've got to get out and around and everywhere. You can't go to London without catching the underground. And they said there's been a bomb. I thought, I'm not catching the underground. Where was the bomb? Anybody remember? Parsons Green. You know, the messages are this. Stay away from danger. How do you do that? Not one person in London thought that Parsons Green was a dangerous place before 15th of September. And you and I like to think we can do the right things and pray the right prayers and live the right lives and we can dodge danger and dance around reality, but we can't. I want to say do what you can do, not what you can't do, as you learn to live in your time. What's your time? Uni time, parent time, well time, unwell time, age, whatever it is. live there with faith. Last point, I'll finish with this. We need to see God in every day and not just in the good days. Have a look at verse 12 and 13. It says, I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all of his toil. This is the gift of God. All right, say it with me. Solomon says, find satisfaction in your what? Don't look at me, look at the Bible. Find satisfaction in your toil. Really? Solomon doesn't say, you know, I want you to eat, drink and find satisfaction in the trip of a lifetime around the world. He says, eat and drink and find satisfaction in your toil. So that means we've got to find God in the everyday and not just in the good days. Now, this is not to mean we run around living in denial. You know, today's a good day. I'm as sick as, but it's a good day. He's not talking about that. That's why I hate hearing Christianity referred to as a crutch. I want you to answer this. Have you ever seen someone leaning on a crutch that looks like they're as happy as a Larry? Christianity's not leaning on a crutch. Christianity is the faith to embrace God's life and God's strength and God's spirit to stand where we might otherwise fall over, to pray where otherwise we might be angry, to forgive where otherwise we might hate, to cry without shame, to fear without judgment. Solomon understands life, when we're going to see that in the next couple of weeks, that it's difficult. But he says, I want you to find me there. Have a look at verse 9 and 10. I'll wrap it up with this. Solomon says, what does the worker gain from his toil? I've seen the burden that God has laid upon men. I want you to know this morning that God knows our difficulty and how much we struggle to find him in the midst of hardness. The two days that we were in Malta were the only 2 days we didn't have bright sunshine. Now, I know when you're on holidays, you want blue skies so you can send beautiful photos back and say, look, we're having a happy time. It's a trip of a lifetime. The only problem is in Malta, it rained. And so the group of us decided that we would get on a bus. A hop-on, hop-off bus. And not only would we get on a bus, we would go upstairs where there's no roof and sit up there in the rain. And I don't know whether we can get that photo of what it looked like, but we looked pretty attractive on top of the bus. That's the only photo I've got. Do you know that that time in Malta turned out to be one of the most hysterical days of our entire trip? If you looked at the weather, you thought, what on earth are we going to do? Bad day, no fun, let's just stay on the ship. Turned out to be one of the days we talk about most of all. Carl broke a rib trying to surf on the top of the seats, as you do. It was just hysterical. Now, look, you're saying to me, is that what God does? Does he just make us laugh No, he doesn't make us laugh. But God does defy the obvious. Do you know how much I realise I try and live most of my life by the obvious? Bad day, my life is going to be bad. Bad weather, bad day. Horrible things happening. We often look and forget that God defies the obvious. Look at verse 14. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken from it. God does it so that we will revere him. Do you know, in the last few months, I've done a bit of Ecclesiastes thinking. You do that when you start to get a bit older. You do that when you're about to retire from a ministry for 40 years. And I started to think, what have I done? What have I done here? What could have I done? Have I done enough? What did I miss? How could have I done things differently? I've had nearly 40 years of ministry. How come the world hasn't been changed? And you know, it's been funny because again and again, God's kind of taken me back to when I was a 26-year-old. Seems a while ago now. But when I was 26 and I was just about to go into ministry, I latched onto this verse in Matthew where Jesus said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against me. And I remember praying one day and saying, Lord, you've got the right man. I'm available to change the world. And it's like God said, thank you for that, but that's my job. And then I persisted. I said, but Lord, at least let me build your church. He says, thank you, Neil, but that's my job. And I remember saying in that little study there in Nova Gardens, but Lord, you've got the right man because I'm about to take on the forces of hell for you. And God said, that's really cute, but that's my job. And it's like I remember the day I said, Lord, what is my job? And it was as clear as a bell. Go and give me the glory for what I'm doing. Because only what God does lasts. So folks, do what you can, not what you can't. Find God in the everyday, not just in the good days. And give him the glory. Because that's the only thing that's going to last. Let me pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for Solomon. I just pray that as we look the next couple of weeks at this, that you'll challenge us and inspire us and encourage us and help us to live by faith, knowing that you are walking this incredible mystery with us so that we might give you the glory for all that you are and all that you do. And this we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.